Good evening. Good evening. My name's Paula Eat, Mayor of Kingborough. It's my pleasure to welcome you all to tonight's council meeting on Monday the 17th of July 2023. Welcome to those in the public gallery this evening and also to everyone who may be watching along at home on YouTube. It's 5:30pm and I now officially declare this meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. In accordance with Council's policy, I'll ask the General Manager to confirm that the audio recording has started.
Confirm, Mayor.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to Elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. The attendees this evening, from councillors is myself, Councillor Reet, Deputy Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have General Manager Mr Arnold, Director of Engineering Services Mr Reeve, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services Mr Smee, Director of Environment, Development and Community Services Dr Fox, the Manager of Finance Mr Jones, the Manager of Development Services Ms Tyler Moore, our Strategic Planner Mr Stander, our Team Leader Statutory Planning Mr Donovan, our Media and Communications Advisor Ms Adams, and our Communications and Engagement Support Officer, Ms Klein, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. We have apologies this evening from Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova and Councillor Dean. On page one now, confirmation of minutes. The recommendation is that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 13, held on the 3rd of July 2023, be confirmed as a true record. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Still on page one, workshops held since the last council meeting. We had a workshop last Monday evening, the 10th of July, in relation to the local government review. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I have for the Kingston Neighbourhood Centre lease. I will be leaving the room. I'm sorry. Have had a cold the last week, so a bit fuzzy. I am on the board of the Kingston Neighbourhood House, so therefore I'll be leaving the room.
Thank you very much. And while I'm on that, just to clarify, because we've got a few councillors away, we have 7 out of 10 of us here during the time that Councillor Midgley is out of the room. No other councillor can leave the chambers because we will not have a quorum. But that only applies for that item. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda a councillor would like to transfer from closed into open session or open into closed? Thank you. Questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public who's with us this evening, would you like to ask a question without notice? No? Thank you. Questions on notice from the public. There were no questions without notice from the public when we went to print, but we would certainly ask that if you wish to submit a question, you can do so by completing the relevant form on Council's website or by emailing kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just following up on the speed reduction for Woodbridge Hill Road, noting in the agenda, in the appendix, it says in August 2023, but I guess the community has been very patient and I have received a recent email in regards to the length this has taken. Are we on track for August 2023?
That sounds like a leading question that Mr Reeve could possibly answer with the word imminent, but we'll see how we go. Mr Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, no, I have no intention of using that word ever again. yes, certainly we have contacted DSG to just put their position down clearly in terms of where it is. I think the dispute from their perspective is what speed limit would be appropriate for that area. But in reality, our submission was to reduce the speed limit to 70 kilometres an hour, and what we need from them is something very clear that says we either do or we don't accept that premise in terms of what that happens to be. I'm yet to receive that. I will make an undertaking to actually contact them again to get that answer back in black and white, which will then give us somewhere to actually go on that side of things. I think it's fair to say that It's not that they're not supportive of actually changing the speed limit, it's just that they can't actually come to a point of what that speed limit should actually be. So they're dilly-dallying between 60 and 70 kilometres an hour, for example. So that's where the issue is.
Thank you. Would it help at all if the local community association wrote a letter or something like that as well? Or
Look, I think it probably would, because we contacted them just so that we can get a straight answer from them, either or. It doesn't really matter. It gives us somewhere to go. But we're sort of yet to receive that at this stage there. So it might give a little bit of extra weight there if we also get something from the community to say, can we get a solution to this particular problem?
Great. Thank you. I'll pass that on. They'll be happy, I'm sure, to hear about that. I've got two more questions, Mayor. So the next one relates to the Child and Youth Safe Organisations Framework, which for many organisations will be implemented from 2024 onwards. And apologies not putting this question on notice. Do we know at all if this has been raised at LGAT? What's the conversation, I guess, around local government in response to this?
I'm just trying to recall. General Manager, can you recall?
And is there, any movement at all for councillors to have Working with Vulnerable Children cards compulsory, I guess, intertwined with that?
Through you, Mayor, I can't recall off the top of my head, Councillor Midgley, but I will follow up and let councillors know if it has been raised with LGAT.
Yes, as all local governments probably need to be aware of that, and I guess what procedures and protocols need to be put in place, I guess, in regards to that. So it'd be great if it could be driven, I guess, from LGAT so that local government is aware of what they might need to do, noting that there is so many other local government conversations happening at the moment that might have been missed. The next question is, again, another one around speed limits, and one that often gets raised and seems to meet just like a dead end of no movement is around the Channel Highway near Snug and Davies Road, and the community request to lower the speed limit near where the bus stop is there. It seems to be another one that just continually gets raised, but there's been petitions and all sorts of things. But how can we sort of get any traction and movement about that?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. I guess you're only going to get traction and movement with that if DSG is actually supportive of changing the speed limit there. My understanding is they're not. I know that they've got a number of other different areas that they've looked at in the past along Channel Highway, including that area there. But I don't believe that they've actually provided anything back that suggested a positive agreement to changing the speed in that area there, bearing in mind it's actually their road and I guess their decision and in terms of what they actually do in that area as well at the same time. I mean, I guess you can continue to actually petition with them for changes to speed limits there, but I guess once they've actually made a decision in terms of what it happens to be, it's probably unlikely they're going to actually change that decision as well, unless there's some other factors that actually come into play.
Further questions without notice from councillors? No. If not, we'll move on. Questions on notice from councillors. At the time the agenda was printed, there were no questions on notice from council. Open session of council now adjourns and planning authority commences at 5:38 p.m. So we are now on page 3, DAS 2023-3, subdivision of two existing lots into two residential lots and one public open space lot and associated infrastructure works at 1179 Channel Highway, Sirius Park Reserve Sirius Drive and Channel Highway Road Reserve Huntingfield, with a recommendation on page 26. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Fox. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. Tonight we're considering an application for a subdivision at 1179 Channel Highway in Huntingfield. I note that there is a beautiful old farmhouse on the site, which is of state heritage significance, and I understand that the developers have worked very closely with Heritage Tasmania to work out how to preserve the original grounds. I acknowledge that Heritage Tasmania have provided their decision of consent to this subdivision. So effectively there were three parcels of land which are proposed to have their boundaries adjusted to create two new lots, one lot being that of the old house and the original garden areas, and the other lot is proposed for multiple dwellings. I really appreciate the efforts that this developer has gone to ensure that the heritage of this area is retained, and I agree with the author of the report that the application complies with the acceptable solutions and performance criteria in the planning scheme. I note that there is a 1970s building of no great significance which is proposed for removal, which will open up a public open space pathway to pass by the old house and connect to the park and ride. I think that is a wonderful prospect. The report indicates a submission of support from the Bicycle Network, who commend the inclusion of this path. The path will not only make it easier for the residents of Huntingfield to safely access the park and ride without having to cross the road, but will also allow for greater appreciation of the old farmhouse, which is currently quite hidden out of sight. So again, I really appreciate the developer's effort to consider how their proposal might best suit the community, and I will support this subdivision application, and I look forward to seeing their application for the multiple dwellings.
Thank you, Councillor Gladwright. Further contributions? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I agree with Councillor Gladwright and the points that they've made. I guess this one, it was an interesting one when the marking pegs kind of went out. We were on a bike, on a K-back cycle around the community, and someone from the K-back group noticed the pegs, and I guess it's that just that conversation where things kind of happen early, and therefore they raised that matter about the non-link from the park and ride safely from the footpaths and things like that. So I guess I just wanted to raise that, saying if you have those conversations sometimes early, that they can, you know, a good outcome, I guess, like this can happen. I mean, it's not, the public space is there. It's not like the path is then going to be happening straight away, because it then will bear the cost council will then have to put the implementation of the path in and things like that. Is that correct? Getting heads nodded. Yes,
lots of nodding there.
And so really I'd like to thank the members of Cycling South and Bicycle Network for really continuously advocating and asking questions about this, because it is about, and I guess that's one of the things that we hear in the representations very loud and clear again, is that sort of lack of infrastructure that then happens and the impact on the traffic and the lack of services close by and things like that. So it is a really great outcome that there will be potentially a link to the growing number of people that will be living, I guess, in that precinct, that people will be able to walk, active transport to the park and ride, which is a really great outcome. And again, just acknowledge the thorough heritage investigation in regards to this, and the staff's responses to the representations that were there, and also the note regarding the representation about the increase in traffic, and that we do know, we do hear from many residents, and if you have children who are in that precinct around the school, we do see the queues of traffic around those peak hour times. But that is noted as well, that the Algona Road upgrade, there will be an upgrade regarding that intersection as well.
Thank you very much, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm broadly in support of this. I do have some questions regarding one of the representations made that is outlined on page 22. In particular, it is item 2.5.3. It is surrounding two households that actually are extremely close to the stormwater work and the sewer pipe work that will be put in by the developers. They've expressed concerns about the potential for damage to their homes through vibration. I actually know some of the individuals there. One of them is actually an engineer that does civil development work in Kingston and knows his stuff. My understanding is that even when DSG did the park and ride, they requested some dilapidation work, which DSG was happy to do. And that was when the works done were 150 metres plus away. So the fact that they have concern about damage to their property, and the fact that others who have done work in the area have acquiesced to their concerns, I'd like to get some advice from council officers as to our ability to put it in. I note that the council officer said it's potentially not reasonable or relevant. I'd like to unpack that, please, and see what we can do to support these people, because I have been told that the developer has done no engagement whatsoever with the surrounding homes and the occupiers of those homes. One of the residents has been in contact with the developer multiple times to deal with the cutting down of trees near his fence line. Apart from that, there's been no proactive work. So they have been advised by council that they should probably represent directly to the developer to get dilapidation surveys done. They have zero confidence the developer will respond positively, and they're seeking some sort of advocacy and support by council. So if I can get some feedback around that in general.
Thank you. Ms Tyler-Moore?
Through you, Mayor. With respect to the planning decision, the developer contacting residents isn't a planning consideration, it's not a requirement. And with respect to the potential damage to the buildings, yes, that is a real matter, but it's not a planning matter. It's dealt with under the Building Act 2016, where a conditions report would need to be undertaken and dealt with, but it can't be form part of the decision-making as the planning authority.
So can you...
Councillor Antali.
Thank you. I'm a bit unclear as to why we can't ask them to do this when we have fair width of discretion to make requests of a developer in this case.
Ms Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor. Through Section 9 of the Building Act 2016, you can't have conditions imposed to do with structural building matters, so it does separate building matters from planning matters. Anything that's structural, safety, those sorts of aspects of buildings are dealt with under the Building Act, not planning. Planning is more related to use, development, changes, vegetation removal, those sorts of things, but not structural matters, that is the Building Act 2016.
Can we send a...
Councillor Antali.
Thank you, Mayor. Sorry. Can we send correspondence to the developer advising them that there's been understandable and reasonable concern from these two households and that you would love to be able to see some engagement with them to maybe do the right thing, be proactive and possibly provide them with that dilapidation survey?
Ms Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the applicant or the developer has already been advised of the representations and the content of those representations, so they are aware of that. It's not really our role to be providing direction about some of the matters that you suggested.
Councillor Antali.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that because we're sitting as a planning authority, under the planning scheme and under the various codes, we have no way of even requesting them to engage or even imposing this.
Ms Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, there is an ability to put an advice clause on a planning permit, which can allude to other things such as acts, which we already do, saying that approvals are required under the Building Act. It is possible that we could add another advice clause to that effect, but just be aware that it's not enforceable if it's an advice clause. But there's nothing to say that we couldn't do that.
Councillor Antali.
Thank you.
Sounds like a potential solution.
Yes, I think some advocacy would be helpful. The occupants of these homes are actually highly qualified in their field. They have reason to believe that damage could be done. I would assume that their interactions with DSG, who, let's be frank, aren't always the most amenable when it comes to engaging with the residents, means that those engineers thought that the concerns were worth spending the money on. Some sort of advice, I think, in this situation would be helpful. Is that something that you could commit to putting into the paperwork?
Ms Tyler-Moore.
Yes, through you, Mayor. Yes, we can add an advice clause. It doesn't need to form part of the decision made by the Planning Authority tonight.
Thank you. I would greatly appreciate that. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Antali. Any further?
Yes, I have one more, and that is regarding something written on page 27. This is more out of my personal ignorance, so forgive me if this is something that all the councillors know, but I have a hunch one or two may not. It is item number 3 on page 27. It's about the council fee of 2%. Is 2% the standard fee? Is it blanket across all developments? Because this would be, in my opinion, quite a high fee for the developer when you think of the total cost.
Ms Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, I'm fairly confident that it's included in the Act. However, I would need to double-check that to give you that advice, but it's certainly
a standard
condition that needs to be complied with.
Okay. Thank you. That's all the questions from me. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Are there any further contributions? Before I ask the Deputy Mayor if she'd like to sum up, I just wanted to make a brief contribution. I know we had three submissions, representors who had concerns about some aspects of the development, and then we also had one representation that was in support. You may recall as councillors that we did hold a workshop in relation to this because some of the heritage issues were quite complex given that the house dates back to the early 1800s, and I also did have an opportunity to visit the site and look at the walk the property and also have a look at the piggery that is going to be partially demolished to allow the shared pathway to come through, and certainly because I couldn't quite understand the when we had the workshop what the how part of the piggery was heritage and the other part wasn't, and it wasn't until I actually went and saw it that I understood there was this quite unattractive fibro kind of addition on the side of it, which will probably be all the better for being removed. Look, I think this is a tremendous proposal, and I thank the developers for working as hard as they can to ensure that the heritage is preserved of what is a very historic house, probably the most historic house in Kingborough, I would suggest. I certainly look forward to this going through. Deputy Mayor, did you want to sum up? No? All right, I will put the recommendation then, moved by Councillor Gladright and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. That is the adjournment of Planning Authority and open session of Council recommences at 5:52pm. We are now on page 54, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. And at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. Excuse me. Still on page 54, draft Tasmanian Housing Strategy with a recommendation on page 57. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Midgley and a seconder in Councillor Antoli. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you to the authors of the report for their response to the draft Tasmanian Housing Strategy. It's important that we've made a response to Council, and also noting that we could have also had made individual responses, and many councils across Tasmania are also making responses to that. As we know, many times around the table we've talked about the role of local government in response to the housing crisis facing Tasmania, and it's not only a state, it's not only just a state and a federal response, but local government as well, and we've had a really recent fantastic outcome in Kingborough in response to crisis housing. So the purpose of the report is to seek our Council's input on a response to the draft strategy that is currently being exhibited for public comment, and thanks so much for providing the background and the discussion of the points. I've made a few points to that. It was good being unwell over the weekend because I did have a look at the strategy and other Councils' responses as well. But I really appreciate the time, that the extra time taken to do this on the side of the desk, I guess, and putting this forward tonight. So I really like as well that you've provided examples in regards to what other states are looking at, because we know there's a lot of movement in other states and a lot of great things that they are doing. So thanks so much for giving the examples of South Australia with their affordable housing component mandates, the City of Sydney regarding their affordable housing in specified zones, and the ACT, all newer states including affordable housing. So they're really great points to make, and great for our government to be aware that there is a lot of movement across Australia in regards to this. I personally have sent through a few different points I'd like to raise that would be great to somehow be included, or I guess I'd just like to raise them necessarily, and then perhaps we can talk about if they can or not be included and how we want to go about that. But in regards to the short stay accommodation, I guess, because it is much more, I feel like that sort of the points around that area could be strengthened because it is such a state planning decision to actually make the changes in that area. So I guess just from the author's staff's response in regards to that, do you feel that the statements you put around the short stay accommodation kind of makes it understand that actually we need to change the planning rules to make any traction and change in that? Recently, City of Hobart trying to make some movement, but then it wasn't supported by state government. So I guess I just want to make sure we're strong in that space.
Mr. Stander.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you. We certainly can take those comments on board. I think the report you most people will see is pitched at a very high level. And as part of our discussions through the Greater Hobart Plan, the regional settlement patterns across Tasmania and so forth, we are providing input, and that's one of the key topics that constantly pops up. So, yes, I mostly didn't go into too much detail about that in the report, but our letter to Homes Tasmania Setting will go into a little bit more detail, and it will be very similar to the comments from other councils.
Great, thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. And also something that gets raised a lot, and especially we know for Huntingfield, one of the criticisms of, I guess, from the community was around that being close to amenity, so public transport. Yes, we do have the Great Park and Ride, but in regards to the shopping centre, we might have a shopping centre one day there closer, but I guess in regards to sort of medical and schools and things like that, so it'd be great as well. I don't want to go, I guess I go through everything. I have sent them through, but I guess that's really important to note that if the state is going to be looking at social and affordable housing, they do, I guess, a scope around the suitability of the locations to that.
Mr. Stander.
Through you, May. Yes, thank you for that comment as well. The report is written in such a way that any discussion that the councils have tonight or comments we'll take on board and submit as part of our response to Housing Tasmania. Infrastructure services and anything related to community services is a constant agenda on all our discussions. I note the strategy does touch on that slightly, but as you can read from my report, I feel like we can go into a little bit more detail, and I think that's where it's important that the action plan actually provide those actions so we can measure it over time.
Thank you. And just another point on that one as well in regards to the location close to public open space. We know for health and wellbeing for our communities as well, if we're providing high density housing, especially social and affordable housing, I'd love to see that the government actually has a mandate around that there is really close proximity to public open space and also places to grow food and vegetables because of the increasing costs of those things as well. That would be great to see. And the other point I thought about that I didn't sort of see a response to, and I just wondered at all, maybe this is just the legislation around building design. Being a profession in this area and visiting many people in the community in social housing, their costs of their power bills is so much significantly higher than many other people due to the really bad design of the social housing and the mould on the walls and things like that, like it is actually true. But with the whole new building design codes and legislation around that, like, do we feel that... do we have to make a point, I guess, around, or should we make a point around, like, north-facing windows, double-glazed and good insulation and things like that, or do we feel like that is already strengthened in that space?
Mr. Stander.
Through you, Mayor, no, certainly we can include that as a comment. I don't have a problem with that. It is something that we're looking at as part of a medium-density guideline. I'm on a working group that is looking at that. For all housing, medium-density housing, but I think it's something that we can put in as part of this submission as well. It's worth, you know, having that discussion, at least in the discussion paper, so it flows on to action.
Thank you, because, yes, I guess another point to raise is it's all enough providing housing for people, but it's actually providing healthy housing that isn't expensive to live in, and that also it's about keeping people housed as well, so ensuring that we have community services and community programs available to support people who are especially in social housing as well. So they're just a few little points, I guess, for me working in the sector for a long time. It's important that these are raised as the government is putting this out. So, yeah, but thank you so much to the authors of the report.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
Yes, I'm very supportive of what Councillor Midgley has said. A lot of those issues I've been battling for decades, actually, particularly solar orientation, insulation, double glazing, that sort of thing. I would have thought that those things have been included in the building code and that they're now mandatory, but it's really disappointing to hear that they're not being included in social housing. And I also would like to raise a comment that I personally feel in item 3.7, short-term accommodation implications, in that the state government is charging the same land tax for short-term accommodation rentals as they are for long-term accommodation rentals, and I think that is having a huge impact on the rental market because of the owners of those properties obviously prefer to get the higher income if they've got the higher expense undermining their profits. So I think it's really an important issue to raise. But other than that, I lend my support to Councillor Midgley's comments and thank her very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Any further contributions? The Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. Yeah, I just want to echo everything that everybody said. I really appreciated your report. It helped me in understand the strategy. My favourite recommendation of yours was the discount on the non-existent developer fees. So I think that's an important one. That's something that I've been talking about around this table for a while, is introducing those developer contributions, but then indeed discounting them for developers who are planning social housing. I think that's a great idea. So, yeah, I just made a summary of the things that you mentioned, so I don't think I'll need to read them out. But, yeah, I particularly liked that one around the discount on fees for social housing developments.
Thank you very much. Any further contributions? If not, I'll just make a brief one. Thank you to our staff who have worked on this and will prepare Council's submission. This is certainly an important matter for us and probably more so than ever before, if you think about the times that we're living in at the moment and the challenges that many members of the community are having with housing, and particularly affordable housing. Like others who have spoken, I certainly do believe that the state government should have a mandate of a certain percentage of affordable housing in developments. So I certainly hope that that is something that they do put into their next housing strategy. And I also think that the points that Councillor Midgley raised in relation to the sort of issues that we did talk about with the large development at Huntingfield around the need for associated infrastructure such as neighbourhood houses and access to other amenities like shops and so on are very important. So I would like to see us include that in our submission as well. So thank you very much. And Councillor Midgley, did you want to sum up? No? Okay, if not, I will put the recommendation as printed on the screen. It was moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Antoli. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. We now move to page 58, Woodbridge Oval Master Plan, with a recommendation on page 59. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Antoli and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. We're here to support the good people of Woodbridge with this report that recommends the endorsement of the Oval's Master Plan. The community has shown strong support for the plan, particularly the safety elements. And the plan, while it's not been formally endorsed by Council, it has the support of all the stakeholders. Implementation of the plan will require some statutory approvals, but we believe that it's in the best interests of the community because the Council has allocated about $200,000 in its capital budget for the redevelopment of the car park, which is critical because parking in the area is scant. And that's the major priority. Formal endorsement of the plan will help the tenant club seek some external funding for other elements of the plan. So there's a whole bunch of contributing, or shall we say, connected factors. with this approval, and the Woodbridge Club and the Council have received funding and grants for specific aspects of the plan. So I endorse this to my peers for support, and thank the good people of Woodbridge for the effort in putting the master plan together.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm also supportive of this, and it's great to see it taking action. I just guess I had a question around process, really. I did have a look at the council minutes from 2021. I did say I had a bit of time on the weekend. I sat still on the couch. I didn't listen to the audio, but I did read the agenda minutes. Just noted that in the conclusion of that council agenda, November 2021, it stated that council continues to work with the stakeholders to progress design and implementation work on the proposals outlined with the draft master plan, particularly with respect to improving safety of the site consideration and things like that. I guess I'm just wondering that process around, so we did pass the draft, then why, I guess, has it taken this long to kind of come to this where we are now? Like, I guess, should that have come back to council earlier, or was there a misprocess? I'm just interested in the process, really, if that's okay, please.
Mr. Smee, could you assist us?
Through you, Mayor. It was largely to do with the fact that this original plan was developed by our former urban design officer, who then left just after putting this to council. So it was an oversight that we didn't get it to council sooner. And, you know, having gone through the design of the car park and being ready to implement, someone from the club actually did point out to us, oh, I don't believe that's been to council for endorsement, so hence we put it up.
Great, thank you. I thought that might have
Councillor Midgley.
Oh, sorry, thank you, Mayor. Thank you, I thought that might have been the case. And I guess 21, 24, we're all still tracking and everything is all great and the clubs, you know, haven't heard anything else. Everyone's still happy with things now. I guess not much movement has happened in the area.
Through you, Mayor, no. Both the tenant clubs are very happy with the master plan. In fact, the only change we've made to it was to change the word draft to final.
Any further contributions? Councillor Antoli, did you want to sum up? No, thank you. If not, I'll put the recommendation as printed in the agenda, moved by Councillor Antoli, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Turn now to page 61, Rates and Charges Policy 3.14, with a recommendation on page 62. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. The Rates and Charges Policy is due for renewal, and the review indicated a few minor amendments. I consider all of them to be appropriate and sensible. The policy aims to provide ratepayers with information about the way in which council determines and collects rates from the community, and the recommended amendments seem to be aiming at reducing misunderstandings, so I'm happy to support the recommendation.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Any further contributions? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question regarding an item on page 65. It's item 5.23. It's around recovery of rates. So as I understand it, prior to this amendment, Council has not had the power, if I can use that term correctly, or has not had in our policy the ability to take a caveat or force sale of a property when rates are in arrears. Is that correct?
Mr. Jones.
Through you, Mayor. Council do take caveats out on properties. We just haven't formalised it in the policy. In terms of selling properties to sell under the Local Government Act, we can sell them, but we always bring it back to council prior to doing that. So this is just formalising, I guess, what we already do.
Okay.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. I'm just trying to understand why are we catching up now? Why has this not been in our... this is not a criticism aimed at anyone. I'm just trying to understand if this is something that's been under the Act that is outright, why are we putting it in the policy now?
I suspect the answer is for clarity, but Mr. Yeah. Jones.
Through the Mayor. Through you, Mayor. Yes, just for clarity, just so people, councillors are aware that we would never sell a property without bringing it to council or never start proceedings to sell a property before bringing it to council.
Right, thank you.
And certainly we've had a few instances lately where people are I guess, causing difficulty in collecting rates, so-called sovereign citizens and others, and so we're just tightening up our policies, and we've had legal advice and just going through the various steps that we do, and I thought it was appropriate to have the policy reflect the steps that we are applying.
Okay,
so Councillor Antolli.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to summarise for my thinking for those listening, this has always been our right, and I'm aware, we know all news stories on the mainland and other places where councils have forcibly sold homes when rates are in arrears, that sort of a thing. So you're just trying to make it clear to the community it is part of council's powers, but you also want the community to know that it's not arbitrary. It's not made by council. The decision is not made by council staff. It is made in consultation or with the approval of the council. Is that correct?
Mr. Jones.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Okay. Yes, that's correct.
Thank you. That's all from me.
Thank you, Councillor Antolli. Any further contributions? Yeah, it's all right. We've still got a quorum. Okay, Councillor Richardson is out of the room, but so we don't delay, we will take the vote because we still do have a quorum. So, Councillor Gladright, did you want to sum up? No? Okay. I will put the recommendation then as printed in the agenda, moved by Councillor Gladright and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously without Councillor Richardson, who was out of the room. We move now to page 74, promotion of the diversity and inclusion statement, for the recommendation on page 75. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
Move. Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate that we needed to cover this as it was deferred from the last meeting. The Access Committee would dearly like to have the diversity and inclusion statement included in the future Local Government of Association of Tasmania's general meeting, and they would also like us to have a copy of the statement placed in a prominent position at the entrance to the Civic Centre to indicate that we are actually quite serious about this issue and we would like to promote it to all Tasmanians. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Any further contributions? Deputy Mayor.
Embracing diversity and modelling an inclusive culture should be front of mind for all councils, so I support the statement being included on the next LGAT agenda. I applaud the Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee for developing this statement, and I support the display of this statement at our front entrance.
Thank you very much, Councillor Antolli. I can see the finger on the button.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I am fully supportive, no problems. How will it be displayed? What, you know, could you explain what the plan is?
I think the intention of the Access Committee was for it to be printed and just be on display somewhere near the entrance, perhaps near... we've got a new notice board up on the, as you enter on the left-hand side behind glass, it could go in there, but just somewhere that it's printed out, made to look pretty and okay, that people are aware of it.
Okay, thank you.
Any further contributions? If not, I will put the recommendation as... Oh, sorry, Councillor Fox, did you want to sum up? My apologies. So it was moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. We turn now to page 81, lease of land, Kingston Neighbourhood House, and I note for the record that Councillor Midgley has declared a conflict of interest and will leave the room and not take part in this debate. So I am looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Street and a seconder in the Deputy Mayor. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. We're looking at providing a new lease of land to the Kingston Neighbourhood House in Maranoa Heights. They've also, the Neighbourhood House have also proposed to lease an additional piece of the Maranoa Heights Reserve, potentially for the purposes of a community garden. I can scarcely think of a better purpose for that land, that reserve's underutilised. And there is a lot of area there that could be utilised for that purpose. The Kingborough Neighbourhood House do excellent work, and if they would like some more land at that area, I think it's only right that we authorise the General Manager to negotiate that lease for them for a further 5 years, and I'm pleased to provide my support to the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Fox.
Yes, I did visit this site and I support the motion, but I do have some concerns around the proposal for fencing around the area that they're hoping to lease from council. The area is right next to a well-used thoroughfare, which is the main entrance into the park. It's a very narrow concrete footpath, not much wider than these desks. And the proposal is that a fence be placed right up against the concrete. And it concerns me that the current fence that they have is made of paling fences, and it's got cyclone wire across the top, and there's regular vandalism of that fence. I would like to see that there is some passive surveillance both of the gardening that's being proposed as well as passive surveillance from the neighbourhood house into the park, because I think that is one of the aims of council, is to make the area safer and to make it less attractive for bad behaviour. So I was hoping that we could include maybe a clause as a suggestion that prior to the fence be constructed, that council is able to have a look at their proposal for the design of the fence, so that that council staff are happy that it achieves the outcomes that we're hoping to achieve. I've spoken with Mr. Smee about this, and he might like to suggest some appropriate wording.
That's exactly where I was about to go, Mr.
Yep.
Smee.
Thank you.
Through you, Mayor, there's two options with this. We can take it on board and communicate the desire of council to the neighbourhood house, or you can actually formalise it by means of adding an additional clause 5 that would say any fencing be of a nature that allows for passive surveillance, with the design of the fence to be approved by council prior to installation.
Councillor Fox.
I'm more than happy with that. That's
exactly
what I'm hoping to achieve. Thank you.
We'll need to check with the mover and the seconder of the motion, Councillor Street, and the Deputy Mayor, that you are both happy. They're both nodding. I think Councillor Street's nodding. Yep, that's a nod. Okay, so that becomes part of the substantive motion. Councillor Ntoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I am very much in support of this, and I echo what Councillor Street said. My concern is Section 6.1, which is a condition set in here by the Biodiversity Officer on page 82. It says that for this garden to go ahead, they have to prove that there will be no negative impact on the endemic eucalyptus growing on the site. Well, if we go and look at the actual aerial photo on page 81, it appears, unless I'm wrong, that the entire site is completely umbrellaed by eucalyptus trees. And you ask yourself, how can a community garden grow with those trees hanging over it? And you would only it'd only be able to be of any use to anyone if the trees were removed. So how can they possibly meet the test?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, there are 4 mature eucalypts on the site. And yes, they shade the area. So that will be somewhat of an issue in terms of growing a community garden, but the concern from our biodiversity officer is that any construction of a garden doesn't negatively impact on these trees. Now, it may be that raised beds or the location of the beds doesn't impact, but the requirement is that an arborist actually provide professional advice as to how this garden can be constructed without, in effect, negatively impacting on those trees. The issue of will a garden grow underneath them really is one for consideration of the neighbourhood house. I've also visited the site. I think there's sufficient open area that won't be shaded by the trees to allow the growing of a garden. But in an ideal world, the gum trees would be removed, but they are an endemic species. They have natural values, and this recommendation endeavours to ensure that those trees are retained and not negatively impacted by what's proposed.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you very much, Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Smee. Have the committee at Kingston Neighbourhood House, have they been informed of this, in my opinion, major requirement that would actually see their garden be, in my opinion, useless?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, yes, we've advised the Neighbourhood House that removal of those trees is not negotiable, and they are prepared to continue on the basis that those trees are there. Look, they've said we'd like to remove them, and we've indicated that any condition of approval by council will be on the basis that they work with those trees.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. So of all the trees there, all cannot be removed. Is that correct?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. There's only four on the subject site. There are other trees within the park that are, some of which are not Tasmanian endemic species, that our environmental services people wouldn't have an objection if they were removed, but certainly the four large eucalypts within the subject area are endemic species. So some to the side, yeah, potentially they could be removed if they're providing shading, but the four within the subject site are not negotiable.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. So if we agree to this and we give them this land, which I am very much in favour of, and they're completely unable to make a garden grow and to be productive, in my opinion they won't. I'm no arborist, but I am an enthusiastic home gardener, and I know that it takes sunshine to grow vegetables. What then? What then with the land?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. I mean, I guess that's a decision for the Neighbourhood House. They understand the conditions upon which council is prepared to lease them the land. They go into this eyes wide open with respect to the fact that those trees need to be retained. Whether they can make a community garden out of this site is debatable. I think with raised beds and depending on where they are located, that it could be possible to grow vegetables, etc. But as I said, these are considerations for the Neighbourhood House in terms of, you know, weighing up the merits of this proposal.
Councillor Antoli.
What discretion does council have in a planning authority sense to decide that the trees can go in favour of the garden?
So we're not considering this as a planning authority.
No, just I realise that. What authority do we have to make that decision, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say.
Mr. Smee.
Just hypothetically.
Through you, Mayor, the trees may, under the planning scheme, be deemed trees of significance. But I'm not in a position to know whether they are or not. It may be that they are protected under the planning scheme. It may be that if they were to be removed, there would be a requirement for an offset. But without assessing them against the planning scheme, I couldn't provide advice here and now on that.
Okay.
Councillor Antoli, before I go back to you, I just want to ask a follow-up question. Mr. Smee, you mentioned earlier that there were other parts within this park where the trees were not endemic to Tasmania and they could be removed. Is that an option that has been put to the Neighbourhood House? Obviously, I understand their preference to use the land that is directly adjacent to them, but would there be another portion of the park that may be more suitable in terms of providing enough sun? And like Councillor Antolia, I certainly don't have any green thumbs, but I do understand that basic concept of trying to grow vegetables in the dark probably doesn't work. Mr. Smee.
Mayor, that is an option. It's not an option that has been discussed with them. As you've correctly identified, they do want to get that connection with their existing property. They're going to need to get water to this garden. The option of having a alternate site is not one that I've discussed with the neighbourhood house manager.
Okay. I guess I'm concerned that they might spend the money on putting up the fence. We enter this lease with them and it turns out that they can't grow the vegetables, and then they've wasted money, and you know, fences aren't cheap, so that would be of concern. Councillor Fox, I know you've got your light on. I know, Councillor Antolia, you've got your light on still, yeah. But I've just
look,
teased
I'll leave
this out a little bit. Councillor Fox.
Could I just answer
yes.
that issue? I did speak with a gentleman called David from
the manager. The neighbourhood house.
He said that they had looked at alternative sites within the park, but their insurance company would not let them take on areas away from their actual boundary, that it was important that they had a joint boundary with the land rather than having it on the other side of the park, because their insurance would become prohibitive if they had to insure both sites. That was
his comment. It would be deemed a separate property.
Okay. Yep.
Councillor Antolia.
Look, I'll leave it at there. I mean, I'm happy to support it. I'm just concerned for all the reasons that the Mayor has articulated, some of the issues that I've mentioned. And I'm not trying to in any way be a roadblock to them. I'm actually trying to open up an opportunity, but I actually see that the environmental test we put in there to be, frankly, insurmountable, and I'm wondering what can we do to help them, because they feed the poor there, they hand out food to the local community. It's a wonderful service. We've all had something to do with them over the years. I think it's a great opportunity for learning, it's a great opportunity for feeding, and the more community gardens where you can actually have these sorts of seasonal fruit and veg, the better. I just can't see how anything will grow there whatsoever. And the foliage that will fall from the eucalyptus will make the soil acidic, and the actual crops won't grow. There's a big problem. There's a whole range of issues, and I don't know how we get around it. And then if they put all that money, effort into it and nothing happens, then what do we do with the land? Can we take it back? How do we remediate it? What's the solution? I think it's very complicated.
Thank you, Councillor Antolia. I think in terms of, you know, given it's proposed at this time to be a five-year lease, so I assume that if the venture is unsuccessful that they could choose to break the lease without any problems. But I do wonder if the answer is that, although I appreciate that they would want to have it fenced for security reasons, I wonder if they were to establish the beds and give it a go first to see whether the vegetables can grow in that location before they actually outlay the cost for the fence, whether that would be acceptable to us as a compromise to make sure they're not throwing, you know, good money down the drain, so to speak. I'm not sure, Mr. Smee, if you have any opinion on that.
Thank you, Mayor. I suspect the neighbourhood house will want the site fenced for security reasons. I'm not sure how it would go if it was unfenced, but we could certainly suggest that to them. Alternatively, the house would need to come back to council in the future with a request to remove the trees, in which case we'd need to assess it against the planning scheme and the natural values that we have had advised by our environmental services team would also need to be taken into account. I'm bearing in mind we have an internal process when we look to dispose of council land, and dispose in this instance being a lease, and that involves internal referrals, and this was the advice that came through that internal referral.
Thank you. Councillor Ntoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Is there opportunity from the Public Open Space Fund for the fence to be paid for out of that?
Mr Smee.
Through you, Mayor, yes, there is sufficient funds to cover the cost of a fence. That's not what's being recommended at present, but yes is the answer.
So if I could seek some advice from you, Mayor, how potentially we could help ease the risk or mitigate the risk to them. We all know that they're run on a shoestring budget. If we could possibly assist them in that way and how we could possibly incorporate that as some sort of assurance from us, I would like to seek your advice on that, Mayor.
I'm just... Mr Smee.
Through you, Mayor. I mean, the Neighbourhood House can simply apply to Council to have the cost of the fence provided by Council, in which case we would then look at our various options for funding, use of public open space funds being one. It's my understanding, however, that the Neighbourhood House intend to obtain grant funding for this, so you know it may well be that they've got provision to cover the cost of the fence through their grant.
That's what I was just searching for in their documentation. Councillor Ntoli.
That's all from me. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. I just wanted to chime in a little bit about the shady area. So when I look at the picture that's in the report, you can actually see quite a lot of tree shadow on the ground, and the sun isn't fixed. So just wait an hour and those shadows will move around, and indeed those areas will become lit with sun. So it would be different if all we saw there was tree canopy, but I can actually see quite a lot of ground where the shade is falling. So I don't think that they need to be concerned that they're not going to be able to grow their vegetables. I think that actually given our long daylight hours over summer, they'll get adequate sunshine in those areas.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Are there any other contributions? I just wanted to very briefly just say that I fully support this because, like others have mentioned, the Kingston Neighbourhood House provides a really valuable service to the community. They already do, in their very small courtyard area, they already do have some raised garden beds, and they get a lot out of those in a very small area that support their Eating with Friends program and the meals that they and produce that they are able to give to disadvantaged people in the community. So I really hope that this is successful for them, and hope that they are able to secure grant funding because they really do value add to our community. Deputy Mayor. No? Okay. Councillor Street, did you want to sum up? No, thank you. I'll put the motion. It's with the additional point five, as previously discussed. So it was moved by Councillor Street and seconded by Councillor Glaidwright. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. And thank you. We'll just get Councillor Midgley back in the room. And it takes us now to page 88, and the feature of local government review with a recommendation on page 95. They say a week is a long time in politics. Turns out a day is a long time in politics if you look at the goings on yesterday in relation to the local government reviews. So, having said that, I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Ntoli and a seconder in the Deputy Mayor. Councillor Ntoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Well, a brave person will move this and try and make sense of this. First of all, I want to thank the General Manager for what is an articulate summary of a complicated series of discussions had at Council level. Council has decided that of the range of options put to it, that to consider in the future of local government review, future of local government review I think is a misnomer now, but anyway, that Council has quite strongly settled on an option that includes potential amalgamation with the Huon Valley and also looking at working with Hobart City Council to potentially support the residents of Taroona under its jurisdiction, and even looking at potentially giving Bruny Island some sort of autonomy under a board structure. Obviously, the government has abandoned forced amalgamations, and the reality, I think, in Tasmania is that councils will probably not voluntarily amalgamate at all. And I have a hunch that as we go forward, nothing is going to happen. So regardless, this is our position. It's good for the community to know that we have been a council that has been open over a number of years to make local government more efficient in this area, and at the macro level in particular I'm referring to. So I just endorse this to council for approval because I do believe it accurately articulates our thinking and our position.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, it's all everywhere on the radio. Driving to council meeting tonight was the talk back. I think I should have written down a few quotes, but I think the toothless tiger was the one that I wrote down, remembered from this morning. But thank you very much to the author of the report, and it's great to have an open and frank conversation, I guess, among councillors and staff, I guess, as well. One of the things I think that we should really highlight is that this is council's point of view and that we have not gone to the community for feedback. So I guess we haven't, like this report we're putting forward and decision on tonight, we haven't actually sought community feedback, I guess, in regards to that. So moving forward, that is something, I guess, very much to keep at the forefront of our mind. I guess the community has had an opportunity for feedback during the review process, but I guess ourselves as councillors haven't really heard, I guess there hasn't been a summary in regards to what that community feedback is. So I guess, and I hope that I'm correct, you know, in saying that. I can see the mayor sort of shaking. No, okay. So I feel like some councillors, like council areas, so in the circular head, I saw that they promoted to have local government conversations with their community so that the councillors and staff can actually hear what the community are thinking. I guess that's something that I don't think we personally have. A lot of people in the community are having a say, but, you know, I've read little bits of summaries, but that's still something that really needs to come, I guess, when that report then does come back to us in the November or October timeline. I think what I've heard is what they've said. And just so that we're putting census, we're really hearing the community's views in that process. And also, hopefully, when in that report, when it does come back, that we'll have more information regarding economic considerations, understanding of neighbouring councils, financial sustainability and things like that, because we didn't have all of that evidence and information. But it's a great way forward that we are open to options and that we are presenting some options as well. And I guess also I don't feel like we have information in regards to then what will the cost regarding if there is boundary adjustments or what the change will be. I guess what then will the state financial contribution be to local government around that? I guess I just wanted to highlight that, you know, we don't know that information either. But we have been asked to provide a response, and this is what we've come forward with in discussion at council workshop. So thank you very much for concisely putting all that together for us.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, echo a lot of what Councillor Antoli has said in moving this motion. I'm perhaps a little more positive about the way forward in that at least we are a council area that has had a mature discussion about this and a mature discussion, I think, about the sustainability of local government in our area. When we've been discussing this as council, I think I've said a few times that I don't like talking about amalgamation with the Huon Valley. Really what we're talking about is talking with the community about creating a new council for the greater southern region that has economies of scale that are going to help us to service the entire area from the Huon Valley right through to the top of Kingborough and Kingston better than what we do now, and that's likely going to look like more staff rather than less staff because it'll be a more financially sustainable council, better able to deliver services. That's the conversation that I think that we've had as a council. Compare that to some other councils around the state. Not once have I heard any of my colleagues make comments to the effect that they don't want Kingborough to go because they don't want to lose their role as a councillor. That has never been a concern of anybody that I've spoken to around this table. And I think everybody would say, and I can put my hand on my heart and say, if it leads to a better outcome for the local government sector, I'm happy to vote myself out of a job. And never once have I heard any of my colleagues say anything different than that. And so I think that our community can be really proud that we are a council area that's had the right discussion through this process, the right attitude through this process. I think it's disappointing that a lot of others haven't, and perhaps that's why we've ended up in the situation that we have now. But I still have some hope that because we've done the right thing, maybe we might get the right outcome for our community and for the greater region if we can convince our colleagues in the Huon Valley that really we have the sector's best interests at heart and the community's best interests at heart. And it's not a... What we're thinking about is not a Kingborough takeover. It's a genuine collaborative process going forward.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Any further contributions? If not, I'll make a contribution before we take it to the vote. Look, I think, as I said earlier, I think it's, 24 hours is certainly a long time in politics, and I was very surprised yesterday morning to learn that the government had made a statement that there would be no forced amalgamations. I think one of the challenges now is going to be for some of the smaller councils to have open minds about what potentially the benefits could be for their residents. And that is at the heart of what this review has set out to do, is how can we best service residents right across the state, not just those that are being serviced by large councils, but by those in smaller, remote areas as well. Because we do know that there are challenges with them, and I think it's a bit unfortunate that the Local Government Review Board did put out the catchment areas and the maps and start talking about lines on a map and what future boundaries could look like, because that has channeled the conversation all of a sudden into being about, what the boundaries would be and what, who might lose their seats and who, where council chambers would be located, and it's created a lot of angst, and I understand that in the smaller communities. But one of the things that it's done is diverted the conversation away from the fundamental issues of why this review was started in the first place. And that was to ensure that we have all councils in the state being financially viable, all councils in the state, regardless of their size, being able to attract and retain skilled staff, which we know is a challenge in the environment in which we all operate at the moment, but also that all councils are able to fulfil all of their regulatory requirements. And when you're a very small remote council, that is... that doesn't have a large ratepayer base, that is increasingly challenging for them to be able to do that. So at the end of the day, it is potentially residents in those small areas that are missing out. So I think it is really important that we continue to have the discussions, and I thank all of my colleagues around this table for the manner in which we've been able to do that. If Kingborough were to form a new council with the Huon Valley, then we would have a total number of residents of around 59,000 ratepayers, and certainly that would lead to some economies of scale and better service delivery for our ratepayers, and that is ultimately what this is about. So I think we're in for an interesting time in terms of where this is headed. It's a shame that minority government has occurred, and so the the landscape for local government review has and reform has changed, but I do hope now that we can continue our discussions with the Huon Valley and look at what the benefits would be for ratepayers. So, Councillor Antoli, would you like to sum up?
Thank you, Mayor. No, all I'd say is that I appreciate what you've shared and also what Councillor Street said, and it's true that none of the councillors ever thought about their jobs or at least expressed it. I don't know what they thought about, but they didn't express it. They were concerned about losing their jobs in an amalgamation. I certainly was not. I do believe this is just a reality of minority government and behooves the electorate of Tasmania to make sure we don't have minority government going forward. But let's just put it to the vote to endorse.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. I'll put the recommendation now as printed on the screen. Moved by Councillor Antoli, second by Councillor Glaidwright. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. I move now to page 96 in the appendices with the recommendation on page 96. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Midgley, seconder in Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Yep, that's an opportunity to ask some questions about the appendix items. The infrastructure report's always a great one to see the visual pictures. Don't get around to all those areas of Kingborough. And I'm just wondering, does that go to the Kingborough Community Forum? I thought that'd be a great thing for that forum to know about.
Mr. Reeve?
Through you, Mayor. Yeah, I don't see any particular reason why we couldn't actually give that to the forum. It's all in open council there and available for them, and if they've got any questions on anything, certainly welcome their feedback.
Thank you. Noticing the...
Sorry, before you go on, Councillor Midgley, you raise a really good point, and I just wonder if, in addition to that area's... quarterly reports, we should probably also, would be really valuable to have like the community development quarterly report also go to that group, because that shows a lot of the activity in some of the areas that they're particularly interested in as well. Dr. Fox?
Through you, Mayor. I think that's a really great idea. We do have a section in the agenda for the forum that talks about recent council decisions and recent council updates, if you like. So it'd be really good to put all of the quarterly reports as they come through under that item on the agenda.
Yep. Thank you, Councillor Midgley, for that suggestion.
Great. No worries. Thank you. It's interesting news, and a lot of the things are sometimes the outcomes of what are discussed at the community forum as well. The Conyngham seat, the seating table there. I know there was talk of putting a kayak rack or a boat rack or something like that. Is that the same location? It's the old toilet block cement slab. It's
Mr.
in the infrastructure
Reeve.
Report. Sorry, I don't know what page.
Through you, Mayor. So the old toilet block, we retain the slab for that with the viewpoint at some stage, yeah, it could be used for something like kayaks or dinghies or whatever it happened to be. I guess the comments we've had back from the community is sort of mixed, or certainly the community groups in support of it, but we've said to them they probably need to make sure that the rest of the community is actually in support with it as well at the same time. So I haven't heard anything back further since we've had that discussion with them.
Thank you. Sorry, I just saw there was a photo of seating, and that's in that location, isn't it?
Page 119, it's on the slab of the former toilet block.
So the community must have asked for a seating?
Seat, yep. He's nodding, yes.
Great, fantastic. And the other one was around page 132 of the appendix that notes that there's a climate governance group commenced. Just interested in that one.
Dr. Fox.
Through you, Mayor, that's correct. So we have set up an internal group of managers and senior staff to look at the Climate Change Action Plan and to make sure that we're tracking implementation of those actions and delegating out tasks as we need to. So they meet roughly every month or couple of months as time permits, and obviously when the Climate Adaptation Officer comes on board, they'll be chairing that group and pushing things forward as well.
Great. Thank you.
Any further discussions? If not, I will put the recommendation as moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Still on page 96, notices of motion. There were no notices of motion. And then we move into confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. that in accordance with Regulation 15, Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, disposal of land, Wells Parade, Blackburns Bay, disposal of land, Spring Farm Lane, Kingston, and sundry debtor write-off. Looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. So that brings us to the end of the open session of Council. So thank you very much to everybody who's been watching along at home, and we also had some people in the public gallery earlier. So in accordance with Kingborough Council's meetings audio recording guidelines policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease, and the open session of Council adjourned at 6:50 p.m. Good evening.